The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Get a Casper mattress and start your year off right. Try it in your home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to casper.com/Glenn. $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
Well, last night, President Trump gave a primetime speech, first formal policy speech since the president was sworn in. Pretty big deal, or so we were told. Yet, I don't know about you, I kind of feel in the end, it was more like the empty calories that all of us consumed as we went out to the parking lot watching the eclipse yesterday. Yes, I did watch the eclipse. I'm not exactly sure why, other than everyone said, oh my gosh, this is so important. You've got to go out. And I have a major fear of missing out. And so I found myself standing in the parking lot like a boob. Did anyone else feel that way yesterday during the eclipse? Because I felt it twice in one day. I felt exactly the same way with the president's speech. Trump said his, quote, original instinct was to pull out of Afghanistan. To me, this was a huge deal. I didn't expect him to actually admit this. After all, sending, you know, more troops into Afghanistan is a 180 from what he was saying during the campaign when he ran on a line that, quote, the war was an unsolvable quagmire requiring a fast U.S. withdrawal. So he admitted that he had changed his mind, which is not like Donald Trump, and he went as far as telling us why he changed his mind, another thing he really rarely does. And I appreciate it. The president said he had determined that the approach would create a vacuum that terrorists, including Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, could instantly fill if we had a quick withdrawal. Trump said, Americans are weary of war without victory, and I share American people's frustration. But in the end, we will win. Okay, several things here that we need to talk about. I don't think we're going to win. Does anybody really believe we're going to win? Because I don't even think we're fighting to win. I needed the president to say one more thing, and he would have satisfied at least my need for hearing it from the president, even though I don't agree with the policy. I need somebody, anybody, to describe what winning actually looks like. Because this is now America's longest conflict, 16 years. And we were told the win was to kill Osama bin Laden. But that was done in 2012. So what are we fighting for or against? What are we doing there? Americans are frustrated because no one on either side has a clue on why we're even there, what we're doing, nor do we even know what has to happen before we can come home. Why is it? This is now the third president. The first one was a hawk, George Bush, okay? The second one wanted all wars to end. He did the same thing that the first president did. And this one, in a third point of view, said, you know what? We need to bring him home. We need to bring him home quickly. And yet he's doing the same thing that the first president did. I'd like to know why. And if your media source isn't helping you figure out why and what a win looks like, so we can stop losing Americans and their limbs on the battlefield for a war we can't even define, and most of us can't even tell you if it's going on or not? If they're not telling you that, but instead they're just making this all about Trump, 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 either good or bad, maybe, just maybe, it's time for a new media source. We begin right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
America's longest running conflict. Honestly, I want to know what. I want to know why. I want to know what we're doing. I want it. Last night when I watched this, I wasn't filled with confidence that we're going to win, but nobody could have filled me. Ronald Reagan could come back from the dead and I wouldn't feel like we were going to win. I don't believe that anybody in Washington even knows what a win looks like anymore. I don't know what we're doing over there. The president says we're not going to nation build. Well, yeah, we are, because that's all we're really doing. We are the police force in the middle of a drug war. That's really what's happening. And why? Why? For what? So ISIS doesn't come in? So Al-Qaeda doesn't come in? We can't continue to spend our lives. Do you know that most people, you know, only 1% of the U.S. population is engaged in this war? 1% of this population has somebody that they know or involved with that are fighting in Afghanistan. This war could go on forever. Most Americans don't even know why we're in South Korea. They don't even know we are in South Korea. How long has that gone on? I thought we were against being America's, the world's army, the world's policeman. That's not what we are for. That's not what we do. Did anybody else think about what George Bush said to me in the Oval Office just before he left? When he said,
I did.
Don't worry, Glenn, the next president, he was talking about Barack Obama, when he said, I'll just fly planes over the Pakistani border and I'll just bomb Pakistan. And I said, that's a suicide. That's our country committing suicide. You can't do that to an ally. He said, don't worry. The next president, whoever it is, male or female, Republican or Democrat, they're going to sit behind this desk in this chair and they're going to make pretty much the same decision because they will realize the president's hands are tied. And they'll have to continue on this policy. Can you play the president from last night? Listen to this.
The consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable. My original instinct was to pull out, and historically, I like following my instincts. But all my life, I've heard that decisions are much different when you sit in the Oval Office. And yes, we will defeat them, and we will defeat them handily.
Isn't that pretty much what George Bush said?
It's the same thing, yeah.
Same thing. When you sit in the Oval Office, you'll realize your hands are tied. Well, then why do we need a president? Why are we fighting over who is president? If the guy who gets in is going to make the same decision, I mean, think you could not have three presidents that were more different. The last three presidents have torn us apart. George W. Bush, wildly unpopular with half the country, and they said horrible things about him. Barack Obama comes in unpopular with half the country hating his guts. This guy coming in, half the country hating his guts. All for different reasons. All for different reasons. One, he was too Republican. Second, he was too Democrat. And third, he's going to drain the swamp, and he's against all of them. And yet they're doing exactly the same thing. Can somebody tell me why? Because I really want to know. Is there anybody in the media that's asking this question? I would also like to know one other thing. We have the most sophisticated fighting machinery the world has ever seen. You can't get in probably within 1,000, maybe 5,000 yards of one of our Navy ships without the Aegis system going off. Automatically will take a plane and rip it to shreds. No man needs to be involved. The Aegis system is there to find out what is in its sphere, what is within attack range, and it automatically turns on and destroys it. Why is it our most sophisticated ships with the most sophisticated navigation and equipment are ramming into things? It doesn't make any sense to me at all. You're not missing the cargo ship.
It's happened twice in 3 months.
Twice. And to me, there are only a couple of reasons. One, we are incompetent. Absolutely and totally incompetent. I don't believe that. I know the people who are in the military. You know many of the people who are in the military. You cannot tell me we're that incompetent. We lost 10 sailors over the weekend. 10? How? How? How is that possible? How did another ship ram our Navy vessel? And we lose 10 sailors. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. None. Zero. So we're either incompetent or there's something else going on. And I don't know what it is. I don't want to be involved in conspiracy theories, but help me out. I'm just not going to sit here and wait for a third Navy ship to be rammed or get lost without asking questions. You know how much those ships cost us? Has anybody been fired for that? Has the captain gotten in trouble? When the Exxon Valdez, remember that? When the Exxon Valdez went and spilled oil, it was a massive, massive ordeal. Here's our ships. Our ship's brand new. That's the USS John McCain. Latest technology. Why don't we know everything about that? Why aren't those guys almost drawn and quartered for incompetent? Were they drunk? Was the warning system that, hey, big ship. I know my car talks to me when I start to go out of a lane. We don't have any kind of warning. Giant ship, turn around.
Almost every car released now has a proximity alarm, but our ship doesn't?
It does.
Beep, 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 beep,
it
beep,
does.
Beep.
It's called the Aegis system. Yeah. It does.
I know. So have they disabled them? Are they not working?
What is happening?
I mean, the McCain one just happened, so they haven't done the investigation yet. But the one from 2 months ago, they did relieve the captain from duty and such.
And was he drunk?
Don't think he was drunk.
Okay.
I have not read the entire report, but they...
That's beyond incompetence. It's beyond incompetence, only because it's not... Think of the most sophisticated car with the proximity alarms.
Right. I mean, it's not, we don't know, when this McCain thing obviously, again, just happened, but I mean, we don't know that they didn't know it was going to occur. I mean, we don't know we don't know the reasoning. We don't know how it happened. I mean, just because an alarm goes off doesn't mean you have, like, if your car alarm goes off and the guy next to you crashes into you anyway, it doesn't mean that you didn't know the proximity alarm was going off.
But the proximity alarm... It's different from a car to a ship.
Of course. Yeah.
You ever heard, this thing's like turning an aircraft carrier. You don't turn those on a dime. It's not a speedboat. Right. So you don't turn them on a dime. So the proximity goes up. Those alarms go off way out to give you enough advance notice to have you stop, reverse, turn, do whatever you need to do to avoid that. How does it get that close that it's even a narrow miss? Imagine we have all kinds of alarms to go off. And if you've seen how busy our airports are, when's the last time two planes collided at an airport? Has it ever happened? Maybe once? I don't recall it. It could have happened, but I don't recall them. It's not frequent. Those planes are landing every 90 seconds. We've had near misses where planes are within, what, 1,000 feet of each other.
I think they're, you know, again, they're different things, right? And we need to know what is going on before we can judge it. I don't think you can make comparisons to cars or planes at all.
Really. I know, because boats are bigger and slower.
Right. It's harder.
Right. I mean, and so the proximity is further out.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes longer. It's a slow wreck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but we don't. This can be completely the fault of the other vessel, right? I mean, and then you're at that point of whether you decide to fire at a merchant vessel.
Or turn.
Yeah, but if a smaller boat is coming at a larger boat, you can't just, like, move out of the way. It's not like you just lift up on stilts and the thing goes under you.
Whatever hit that thing was big.
It was massive.
Did you see the damage?
Yeah, it was huge.
I mean, it was big. So
the one before, the Fitzgerald, they have let, you know, you said they let the captain go. And the fisherman said that they didn't have a radio. So they weren't listening anyway. So that small boat, you're right, they were just coming on the boat. There was no turning. There was no getting out of the way. That's why they got rid of the captain, right?
Yeah, that one they seem to blame on operator error, kind of. But I mean,
well, here's what I am tired of. Yesterday we made a big deal, and I guess people, you know, if you went with your kids, that's one thing. I get it. You went with your kids; it was a great memory to watch the. But did you see TV news yesterday? It was nonstop, wall to wall coverage. I walk in this morning, and they're still talking about the damn eclipse. With all of the things that are going on,
I had this thought yesterday of that, like, this has taken 99 years. I got sick of it in 5 seconds. It took 99. We waited for 99 years. I looked at it for 5 seconds, got sick of it, and immediately turned into, I can't believe this news coverage. I mean, it took 99 years to get here, and I still was frustrated in seconds. Our attention span is intriguing.
Pat, I saw they've got National Guard directing traffic out of Oregon, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We have big fish to fry, guys. We have bigger questions like, why? Why? What are these troops going to do in Afghanistan that will bring our boys home? What new information did the president have, or did he just dismiss everything that had been said? Is this truly the best course of action? 16 years. How much longer? I just want to know, what does a win look like? So I know we've hit it. We can go home now. Now this, I want to tell you a story about Stephanie. Last year, Stephanie and her husband made a hard decision to take a transfer that her husband's work had offered them. That meant leaving their hometown of over 24 years, where all the kids had grown up, leaving their children, leaving their grandchildren behind. It was a really emotional move. Stephanie is a listener to this program, and Stephanie said, I know who I want to help sell the house. And so she contacted realestateagentsitrust.com. It was an emotional time for Stephanie and her family, as you can imagine. Within an hour, a real estate agent returned Stephanie's call. Ashley was the real estate agent that helped her and her family, making a tough time into an easier experience. They worked together, they laughed together, they cried together, and they got the home sold on time and for the most amount of money. And now Stephanie and her husband can move on and come visit her grandchildren and her children. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a hard thing to move, especially when you've been someplace for a very long time. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com are going to get your house sold. They're going to make it as painless as possible, and they'll even help you find the new house wherever you are. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
There's a ton of things that I have to do this year. One of them, get organized, get into better shape, spend more time with family and friends, and to do it all, I have to be well rested, and that starts with getting a great night's sleep, which
You're guaranteed to get every night when you sleep on a Casper mattress like I do. Casper is, I think, the perfect mattress, not only because it is really, really comfortable, it supports my back and everything else, but it is so wildly inexpensive when you A-B compare. Casper mattress, I'm not alone in loving it. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. The mattress ships for free in a box so small you're going to be saying to yourself, how the heck do they get it in there? Get a Casper now. Start your year off right. Try yours in your home for 100 nights free with shipping and returns. Go to casper.com/glen. That's $50 off the purchase of your mattress. You can do it right now. casper.com/glen. $50 towards the purchase of your mattress. Inexpensive and a great night's sleep. casper.com/glen. Terms and conditions apply.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
This is not going well for the president, at least with in many of his anti-war supporters. Whereas I see Trump as a threat to his re-election, more troops to useless human grinder in Afghanistan, says Ann Coulter. Laura Ingram, who's going to pay for it? What's our measure of success? We didn't win with 100,000 troops. How are we going to win with 4,000 more? I thought we were going to drain the swamp in Washington, not clear the desert in Afghanistan. Joe Walsh, 17 days, 17 weeks, 17 months, 17 years, doesn't matter how long and we're in Afghanistan, it's not going to change a damn thing. More in a minute.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Last night, the president said that he wants to send another 4,000 troops into Afghanistan.
Did he say that? I don't think he did say
well,
that.
Well, no. He didn't actually give the number. You're right. They're speculating that it'll be another 4,000 troops that they're going to send into Afghanistan. Could be more. I mean, we had 100,000 troops in there. But what we didn't win. I don't know what winning even looks like.
How many did the Soviets have in there all through the 80s?
It's the place where empires die. And, you know, the idea was, let's go in and get Osama bin Laden. We did. And now we're still there. Children that were born during this war in 2019 will be eligible to go fight in the same war. We are entering a time to where war is becoming meaningless for those in wealthy countries because we're not fighting them ourselves and they're becoming more and more robotic and our drones are fighting, which are being flown here in the United States. It's a video game. Is there some responsibility that we have as people to actually feel the pain of war? Is there some responsibility that we actually know that human lives are being taken in our name? I'm a huge fan of Muse. They're not a fan of mine. But I'm a huge fan of Muse. And met Bellamy, who was just a brilliant, brilliant writer. There was a CD that came out called The Resistance back in 2009. And I think it's my favorite Muse collection. And it is, the lyrics in 2009, I thought were spot on. But if you want to know why Brexit happened, this is a band that really is huge over in Europe. And you want to know what people are feeling, why Brexit is happening. All you have to do is read the lyrics of Muse. You see it. If you want to know what people are feeling and why, if Donald Trump begins to fall into line with all of the other presidents, that will make two presidents in a row.
that promised massive change. Barack Obama delivered his massive change. He went with health care. He got that done. He got a lot done. This president does not have the support of the GOP. He's fighting the GOP. What a surprise. So he's not going to be able to deliver on anything big. And when that happens, there's only two consequences. They turn on him, or he turns, along with the people, on Congress, both the GOP and the Democrats. And a lot of people think that's good. It's not. We're not a country of revolution. We're not a country of civil war. The last time that happened, it almost killed us. We escaped by the skin of our teeth. And it was horrible. Scenes of death everywhere. I want you to listen to the lyrics of a song from Muse. It came out in 2009, and ever since I saw the president speak last night, I kept hearing these lyrics over and over in my head. You and me, we are the same. We don't know or care who's to blame. But we know that whoever holds the reins, nothing will change. Our cause has gone insane. And these wars, they can't be won. And do you want them to go on and on and on? Why split these states when there can be only one? And must we do as we're told? You and me, fall in line. To be punished for unproven crimes. And we know that there's no one we can trust. Our ancient heroes, they're turning into dust. And these wars, they can't be won. Does anyone even know how they begun? They just promise to go on and on and on. I believe if the media and the politicians all across the world listen to the lyrics of Muse, they would see their future. People feel as though they're not being listened to. People feel as though they're being lied to. People feel like everybody's in on it except them. It doesn't make sense to us. So what is it that they know that they're not telling us? Because there's no way they win these wars. Who's profiting on these? Because it's our kids that we're sending off. It's our kids that are paying the price. And we don't even know why they're being fought. And we are entering a place to where Muse goes. And that is an uprising. And you don't want an uprising. I don't think the average person wants an uprising. I don't think the average person has really thought it through when they say, destroy the whole system. This system is divine. It's just been so badly abused. This system was designed to put you in power for the first time in human history. To put you in power. And what happened? It gave us so many riches. It gave us so many diversions. It gave us so many
things that made us fat and happy and honestly blind and lazy, that we didn't keep our eye on the ball. Go back today and listen to Eisenhower. I truly believe it's the last time a president gave a really self-sacrificing speech. Dwight Eisenhower was the Allied commander of all of the forces. He was a general. He, if there's anybody that knew what the military could do, it was him. If there's anybody who had respect, the respect of the armed forces and the respect of all those who fought with him, it was Dwight Eisenhower. He becomes president and he talks about the military-industrial complex. Now, this is something that has become a conspiracy theorist dream. It's a utopia for conspiracy theorists. Oh, the military-industrial complex. But he warned us. If you don't, he said, for the very first time, we're going to have a standing army. We're going to have new technology. We're going to have to do things that we never thought possible because we can all be dead in 18 minutes. But that's going to require you to stay vigilant. Or the military-industrial complex, the people who are just making money on the growth of machines of death are going to control things. And I don't want to say that the people that are making war machines are evil. It's just, this is just the system we're living in. And they're making money and nobody wants to see their money cut off. And so they just keep going. And I honestly don't think it's because of money or anything else, but I don't know what the reason is we're still fighting these wars. Because if you wanted to fight to win, the United States has that capacity. It can fight to win. It can change the world just with its military might. And then come home. I want to talk to you next hour about an answer to all of this. Something I started talking about yesterday that we all kind of have to do. It's time to take an inventory. It's time to find out what we really believe, who we really are, and begin again with a blank sheet of paper. What is the story we're going to write for our country? What is the story we're going to write for ourselves? We'll do that next hour. Right now, let me tell you about LifeLock. Right now, if you haven't updated your smartphone operating system, you probably should. Security researcher discovered a bug. It was buried deep down in an obscure Wi-Fi chip, and it makes billions of cell phones vulnerable to somebody coming in and hacking and taking all of your data. It can wipe out all of the security controls built into your phone and allow hackers to break in and use your phone to infect other people's phones. Somebody's identity is stolen about every 2 seconds. Now, LifeLock detects a wide range of identity thefts. Nobody can, you know, stop all identity theft or monitor all transactions, but they look in a different way. This is not like just free credit monitoring. That's too late. This is when somebody is using your identity. They mark it, flag it, and call you. And if there is a problem, then a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to stand by your side and work to fix it. That's what makes LifeLock, to me, worth every penny you pay. Right now, you can get a special 15% discount off the first year of your LifeLock membership. 1-800-LIFELOCK or visit LifeLock.com. Use the promo code BECK15. That's BECK15. You're going to save 15% off your first year. Offer ends August 27th. Terms and conditions do apply. That's 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK15.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Stu is on a different page than I am on this Afghanistan thing. I think it should have been over 15 years ago.
Me too. Fight it to win. Fight it all out. Do the shock and awe that you promised. Only really do it. And then get out. I hate what they're doing now. And that's the problem is they're not going to fight this the right way. We don't fight wars to win
this
anymore.
This doesn't teach anybody anything except they can bleed us to death.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach anybody anything. You go in, the point of war is to win and then to stop future wars. So you go in and you fight it with everything you have and you take the breath away from the enemy until they say, okay, I stop. And then you stop and say to the whole world, don't do that to us. Don't try to bring down our buildings with our people in them because we will do this again. Now, you've paid the price. I think you've learned your lesson. We're moving on. Good luck to you. Leave us alone and we will leave you alone. That's the way you fight and win the war and the peace. Show me, what does a win look like, Stu?
I'm coming to a point where I think that's the wrong question. And I know this is, you know, I'm totally out of the mainstream of this room and of the audience, so I go enter this completely knowing that.
It's fine.
But it's, you know, I don't know what a win looks like. I know what a win looked like in World War II, right? World War II, we won. We knocked the Nazis are gone. We knocked them out. We won. 80 million people died for that. And while I'm really glad we won, which war would you rather have? A win in World War II or this where we have lost 2,400 of our best people? And I you can't not overstate how important that is. It is different than 80 million.
If you're going to compare the civilian casualties and all an enemy as well as, ours, then you got to make the death toll higher than that in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a lot higher.
Activist
than
groups say about 1.5 million.
Which in a country like Afghanistan,
it's really significant.
A lot of freaking people.
I will say that's an activist estimate that I don't believe, but still, it's still hundreds of thousands likely. But again, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
so why are we killing them again? Help me out.
Well, look, we have 12 seconds here before we have to go to break.
I asked you.
Oh, okay.
So that way there's no way you can win. See, that's what a win
got
looks
like.
This is what a win looks like.
Really? This is it?
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
You give, say uncle.
Never!
Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Get a Casper mattress and start your year off right. Try it in your home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to casper.com/Glenn. $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
Here's what you need to know today. In Houston yesterday, 25-year-old man tried to blow up a statue of Major Richard Dowling. I'd never heard of the guy before. Apparently, he was a Civil War hero. It stands in Houston's Herman Park. The man was caught kneeling in the bushes near the statue by a park ranger. Park ranger said, hey, dude, what are you doing?
Nothing.
You gonna do something against the statue? Guy actually was honest and said, yeah, I hate that guy. He says, that's weird, because Glenn Beck hates Woodrow Wilson, and yet he's not blowing up his statues, but that's another point. The park ranger said, come along with me. They found nitroglycerin and other powerful explosives on him, which he started to drink the nitroglycerin when he got caught, but then was like, oh man, this tastes horrible. Yeah. America, it is time to get a grip. We cannot blow up statues and monuments because we don't like that guy, like that event, or we feel oppressed. We have to be a nation of laws, a people in control, or we're going to lapse into chaos. And if your media source isn't telling you that, then you might as well go find a media source that will tell you the truth.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Last night, I was not in a good mood yesterday at all day. And it was from dawn till dusk. And part of it was because I had just come back from Mexico, and I was disgusted by what we were all doing with our time, including me, what I waste my time. I almost called my wife yesterday and just said, I'm coming home. Because it just seems like a waste of time with all of the things that are going on. And then, yesterday the eclipse happened. My gosh, probably as impressive as the Y2K panic. And the CNN coverage of that missing plane that went on for about 2 months. Oh, do you remember where you were when you first heard about that missing plane? I found myself last night actually walking outside, or yesterday afternoon, walking outside to see the eclipse, and I spent all of about 20 seconds. I put on the glasses, I looked up, and I thought, looks exactly like it does in the pictures, on television, and a thousand other things I have seen a million times. And I don't think I can stand out here and go, wow, look how dark it's getting. Of course it's getting dark. It's a solar eclipse. Let's move on with our lives. That was just me. That was just me. That coupled with the statue talk, that we're oppressed. And I should have more empathy because I've been there. I've been there. And my dad is the one who first got me to open my eyes, stop complaining. And he did it in an unusual way. He didn't tell me, like I think I said yesterday, I told Tanya last night, so laying in bed, I think I said, shut up, more times on the air than I ever have in my entire career, perhaps combined, just yesterday. And I felt bad about it. And and I realized what my dad did in the same situation. Instead of telling me, shut up, stop your whining, he asked me to do something that I asked you to do yesterday. Make a list of all of the things that have happened in your life that are really, really bad. The worst things that have happened. I made my list this morning. I'll just give you the top four. Number one, my mom committed suicide. Number two, my daughter has cerebral palsy, had strokes at birth. Number three, I came from a broken family and then broke up my own family, my divorce. Number four, my father, quite honestly, was a mixed bag. There was abuse in my family. And I was never close to my father, and then he became my best friend, and then some things happened, and I realized what a horrible fraud he was, and We didn't speak to each other again. Those are my four. I could go on because I have a long list. But in the time period that my dad and I were talking to each other, and we'd have conversations every day, I called him up one day and I said, you know, Dad, basically, let me translate into today's speak. I'm so oppressed. Everything's against me. My people at work are against me. And just, you know, I can't catch a break. And I've done everything I can. And, you know, now I just don't know what to do. I've had a really tough life. And my dad said, you know what? You're right. Write a list down. He said, I've got some bread in the oven. He was a baker. I have some bread in the oven. Write it down. Spend the afternoon. Write it down. And then call me tonight. We'll talk. Didn't take me long because I think I got to about number four and I figured it out. And I called him back and I said, you don't have any bread in the oven at all, do you? And he laughed and he said, good for you. You're smarter than I thought. So what did I learn? And you need to learn this for yourself. America needs to learn this coast to coast. Here's what I learned. Out of the list I gave you, this obviously was not number four when my father was, when I thought I had my father figured out. And I hesitate to say any of this because I think now I have my father figured out and I don't think I will in my life. But the way I currently view my father is he was a pretty bad man. And man, I'm going to leave it at that. But if my father wasn't the man that he was, I wouldn't be the man who I am. I wouldn't stand for the weak, I believe, as much as I do. It's very personal to me to stand when everyone else is sitting down or refusing to say anything, because I saw that happen in my family. No one stood for the weak. And one of the last things I said to my father was, this ends now. And someone in this family has got to change the direction of the family. And I think you tried, Dad, for a while, but you put down the football. And so now it's my turn. And I'm going to stand for the members of this family. That bad experience with my father, which was horrendous and I would never want to happen, what I did with it was not what I would have done in the first half of my life. In the first half of my life, I would have looked at it as something that just was in the column of everything is bad in my life and woe is me and look how troubled I am. My divorce. Anybody who's been divorced, that's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And the anger and the rage, and quite honestly, at times, the hatred is really hard to overcome. And then the broken family and the trouble with the children, the damage just goes on and on and on. But if it wasn't for that low point, I wouldn't have picked myself up. If it wasn't for me being alone on Christmas Eve, and I don't even know what year, 96, 97, alone, just wanting, just feeling sorry for myself, quite honestly, and being faced with a choice, you either go on or you kill yourself. You either do what your mom did or you find a way to go on. And I didn't know how to go on, but I knew I didn't want to do what my mom did. And mainly, honestly, I was born a coward. If I was some sort of hero, I guess, if I had courage, I wouldn't have killed myself. I thank God I'm a coward. I was afraid. But it was that low point that turned me into the man I am today in many ways and allowed me to find my true soulmate and love for all eternity, my wife, Tanya, who saved my life. I wouldn't have been there to meet her had I made a different choice earlier. My daughter, number two, had strokes at birth. It is because of those strokes that a 19 or 20-year-old kid bargained with the Lord. First, take me, give it to me, not her. He wouldn't. I knew he wouldn't. Then I promise I will help children. I will serve you. I will do whatever I can to serve you. That promise lives with me today. That promise is what, when I left Connecticut, is why we were the biggest single food fundraiser in the state's history every single year. Probably still is. Probably nobody's ever broken that record. My mom committed suicide. Well, if my mom hadn't committed suicide, I wouldn't have moved in with my father. And my father drove me every weekend 60 miles back and forth, and then later 90 miles back and forth on the weekend, so I could do my part-time job in radio when I couldn't drive. There is no bad. Everything in my life, I can either choose to have it oppress me, or I can choose to say, while I wouldn't wish or pray for that, I'm grateful for that experience. And I'm grateful for the miracle of the change of perspective, because that's all that happened. These are the things that weighed me down the first half of my life. All of the mistakes that I made, all of the bad things, they weighed me down. A miracle is a change of perspective. I don't look at it that way anymore. Those are the things that drive me to be a better man. Our life is not set in stone. You could be in prison today. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Choose to be someone that you were meant to be, not the person you allowed yourself to become. Everything you have in your life was built by you or others telling you who you are yesterday. Change the story. Find out who you really are. There's no statue that can oppress you. It's a dumb, stupid, dead, inanimate statue. How is that oppressing you? How is my mother or my father and what happened with me and my dad, how is that oppressing me? Only by choice. I want you to take out a blank sheet of paper. And I want you to start writing a new story. First, the story of who you want to be. I want you to look at who you were and what shaped that story, all of the bad things. And then look at those things and say, wow, if those wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't be where I am right now. And trust me, it's a good thing that you are right where you are. Even in your lowest place, you're right exactly where you need to be to pull out a sheet of paper and begin a new life and a new story. Everything changes. There is nothing that we can't handle if we pray for that miracle of a change of perspective. Liberty Safe is our sponsor this half hour. They not only make great safes, but they make it easy to own one. Right now, libertysafe.com, you'll find Liberty Safe at a great price and 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $15 a month. Now, I've been working with Liberty Safe for 7 years now, and I have not seen them offer deals like this before. But I have seen the quality of their safes, and they never change. They really are the best-built safe on the planet, and they're all made here in America. Nothing like the peace of mind of owning a Liberty Safe and making sure that everything that is important to you is in that safe, and it ain't going anywhere. Now you can have that peace of mind for as low as $15 a month on approved credit. Go to libertysafe.com, the home of the best-built safes on the planet, bar none. It's libertysafe.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
There's a ton of things that I have to do this year. One of them, get organized, get into better shape, spend more time with family and friends. And to do it all, I have to be well rested. And that starts with getting a great night's sleep, which you're guaranteed to get every night when you sleep on a Casper mattress like I do. Casper is, I think, the perfect mattress, not only because it is really, really comfortable, it supports my back and everything else, but it is so wildly inexpensive when you A-B compare. Casper mattress, I'm not alone in loving it. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. The mattress ships for free in a box so small you're going to be saying to yourself, how the heck do they get it in there? Get a Casper now. Start your year off right. Try yours in your home for 100 nights free with shipping and returns. Go to casper.com/Glenn. That's $50 off the purchase of your mattress. You can do it right now. casper.com/Glenn. $50 towards the purchase of your mattress. Inexpensive and a great night's sleep. casper.com/Glenn. Terms and conditions apply.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK. This, by the way, is this monologue is not coming out of no place. It has been something that I've been thinking about for the last 6 months as I've been taking inventory of my life and where I'm headed and what I'm doing and why am I doing everything. And then also seeing this weekend being down in Mexico and seeing people who have far many more reasons to complain than me. I mean, being an actual slave and then being named one of the country's most powerful women by Forbes magazine in 2 years. That's a choice.
It's strange to hear you talk about your dad this way, though, because, you know, sure 30 years ago, that's not how it was.
10 years ago.
15 years. 10 years ago, it's not. I know things changed at the end, but your dad was like an oracle when we first met in Baltimore. And you used to impart the wisdom he imparted to you. And he was like some sort of
Yoda.
Yeah.
He was full of wisdom. He really was full of wisdom. But I didn't find out until push came to shove. He didn't live that wisdom.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
He learned it.
That's why it's so hard to get my head around that.
I know.
Man,
everything that I thought about my dad turned out to be not true. And it was, I've talked about it cryptically over the last 5 years or so, and said, "Someday I'll tell you I've lost my best friend. You didn't know that it was my dad." And it was a hard, hard road to hoe. Back in
the
minute.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So let me put what I just said to you. Change of perspective is the biggest miracle you can have. Let me show you this in real time. This is last night. This is as I climbed into bed and I was in a really bad mood. I wrote, "Wow, I saw it. The moon actually came between us and the sun."
Jeez.
Like, that almost never happens, or actually it does, but we don't usually see it because we can't stand in the middle of the parking lot that's in the middle of the ocean because there's no office buildings in the middle of the ocean. But I just keep replaying this in my head over and over. I can't seem to shake it. Do you know how sometimes when you go to a concert and the band isn't as good as when you hear them on the radio? Yeah, not here. No, sir. This eclipse was everything we were promised, and perhaps even more. It looks just like it does on TV, except perhaps maybe less impressive and smaller. But wow, was that worth the 99-year wait, or however long it was or will be till we see it again next time. I'm going to be telling my children's 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 children for years to come about how everything almost seemed to stand still as we all held our breath, standing there wearing stupid paper glasses that somebody actually paid for, staring up at the sky, just not knowing, will the sun return? It's just like the feeling I had when Reagan was shot. I remember where I was when he was shot. Or maybe the way you felt after, you know, midnight on the year 2000. Oh, do you remember the Y2K panic? Perhaps for you, maybe it was more like the entire month of the CNN coverage of that missing plane. Wow, where were you when you first saw the coverage on CNN? I, for one, I think we're out in a parking lot with other sheep. Then and now. But that was just my experience. Take a moment to really ponder the millions of stories that are out there today. Where were you when the eclipse happened? We can only hope TV news will let us hear some of them in the days to come. All unique, sure, all of them. And none of them driven by a massive fear of missing out. What are the odds that someone else stood in the parking lot like I did, looking up while hearing someone else say, "Wow, look how dark it's getting. Pins and needles, people. Effing pins and needles." I laughed. I cried. I had the chills. Truly, truly, and I know it's been said before, this time I mean it, better than cats. If the eclipse comes to your town, don't miss it. So that's what I wrote last night.
Can you take a moment of enjoyment out of
right?
life?
No, I mean, yesterday,
geez,
no,
you're wait, miserable.
Hang on. Last night, no. Change of perspective. Today, not in a mood. Today, let me share this perspective. This summer, I was up at the ranch, and we were roasting marshmallows over a fire. And we were standing there and we were talking and we were reading. I was reading the kids' stories. And the fire starts to go down and you see the Milky Way. Now, where I have a cabin, there's no lights anywhere. There's no electricity for miles. And so it is beautiful at night, and the sky is three-dimensional. And I remember the first time when I was living in New York, and the first time I went out there and I started seeing the sky, I realized I hadn't seen the stars in forever. I hadn't really looked at the moon because man's construction of buildings was really impressive. the cities were awesome and it made you feel small. But I never felt small like I do when you're standing around a campfire. And I was just thinking about this summer. The problem is we no longer look up. We no longer think, wow, there's something much bigger than me. I'm very, very, very small. And yesterday, we had that opportunity, and I'm the one who missed it. We had the opportunity to go out and look up and experience just how small and unimportant in some ways we are to the rest of the universe. It was humbling. And instead of me coming home and hearing about the kids and their experience with the eclipse, I came home in a bad mood and I didn't really care about the eclipse because perhaps I was feeling not small enough yesterday. That's a miracle. A miracle is just a change in perspective. And I pray to have many, many more of those.
So you're happy again? Is that that's
no,
the
I'm
summary?
Miserable. I'm always miserable.
Okay, good. Who's the guy that we had on here that was talking about flow? Remember that guy?
Yes.
We had the guy in here who's talking about creative flow. I can't remember which book that was because we've read 1,400 of them in the past few months. But that was one of the things he talked about, and that's kind of what kicks it off. You can get into that mode of real creativity and understanding, you know, having a different perspective on the world from just massive feats of nature. That kind of kicks the human being into that, you know, world. And I think we see that a lot of times with faith, too, in that, you know, those moments of like, wow, look at that. I mean, how can you say there's no God when you look at that? That moment is, I think, you know, it's a real moment for people, and it does change perspectives.
That's cute, but I can't be happy as long as there's offensive statues still up. I just can't.
I can't be happy. And quite honestly, I'm having a hard time with your, oh, wow, how could there not be a God when the flat earthers explained this yesterday.
They did.
And they explained it well.
They did.
Apparently there's a dome over our flat earth.
Wait.
So the dome, I guess, is somewhat semi-circular, right? It's a dome.
It's a dome.
It is. It's a dome.
But the Earth itself is just a flat, round disc.
Yes.
And then we've got a dome over the top of all of
that. That's why it looks like it's kind of going on. If we were theoretically a globe.
Of course, that's the logical explanation.
And they also say, boy, isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that the moon and the sun look to us to be the same size, except you say one is really, really giant.
And one is 400 times as far away, but it's also 1/400th the size. Come on, people. Yeah, how can you believe
that's
that?
That's stupid.
I mean,
the sun
what are the
is
odds?
Not 92 million miles away. It's 37 miles away.
That is what the Flat Earth Society would like to point
37
out.
37 miles.
37 miles away.
It's really the size it looks. So.
And how is all that heat traveling through all that cold?
It's not. Right. They're just 37 miles and it's here.
And if it's really that cold out there, how come it's hot here and cold in space?
That doesn't
make any sense.
If it was warming all the way through those 92 million miles, space would be warm.
Right. It's suddenly warm here and cold in space.
Come on.
We all know that doesn't make sense.
Can't expect us to believe this stuff.
They went to a point of like actually making diagrams of the sun and the moon and the earth and showing how, see, this, the shadows would be much bigger if that were true. That was their big point.
What?
How? I mean.
Wow.
How? How do they explain? Did we go to the moon? Do you know?
No.
Oh,
we've
gosh.
Not been to the moon.
What?
No. Don't be silly. That was done on a lot in either Nevada or California. I can't remember where.
Wherever you've actually talked to the president of the.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think it was like 20 years ago. I was in Salt Lake City at the time, so I think it was 97 or 98. And yeah, I was really surprised by a couple of things, like the distance of the sun from the Earth, which
I would really like to talk to them. I'd like to hear.
It'd be fun.
I'd like to hear. And treat it, you know, like, you know, with respect.
Yes.
I'd like to really understand how they believe all this works. I'd love to, instead of just say, oh, they're just a bunch of flat earthers. I really would like to understand.
And have you
the
ever
thinking behind
been
that.
In a plane? I've never run into the dome.
They didn't go high enough. That's all.
Is that it?
Yeah, you just didn't go
that's
high
all.
Enough.
Okay.
Go higher, and you'd run but into it.
Right. The edge too.
The edge of the disc.
I've flown around
has
the world.
To be somewhere, right?
Have you?
Yeah.
What you believe. I mean, but have you flown around the world?
You've flown to one spot to another spot.
Yeah, and you know what the pilot said? Oh, we're going. We keep going around the world. I swear. I mean, how would you know? You don't know.
Is it something to do with, I mean, can you ever, Pat, can you ever get to the edge of the Earth?
I know I asked him that. I don't remember what the answer was. I don't remember.
I demand that you find a way to get these guys.
It might have been centrifugal force, which they may believe in, but they don't believe in gravity. So I can't believe they believe in centrifugal force.
So like we're in a giant roundup.
Yeah, I guess.
And we're just spinning around really fast.
Yeah.
Well, how come we're not all just
piled
in?
You would think some of the water would splash over the edge,
right.
too.
And well, what do you think is causing the waves? And how come we're not all just like, you know, pressed up against the middle, you know, a mountain in the middle of the disc?
Well,
if we're on a roundup
ride.
And there's that centrifugal force, shouldn't we all just be like pressed up against a mountain?
These are questions we're going to have to ask of him.
Okay.
Well, anyway. I don't know the answer to them.
For those of you who believe in, you know, the sun and the moon and the
spherical Earth.
Yeah. it might have been profound and I missed it yesterday, but I'm glad you didn't. And now this. Burglary rates spike this time of year because you're not home. And burglars don't want to run into you while you're at home. That's why we all think that burglaries happen during the nighttime. They don't. Generally speaking, they happen during the day. Nobody wants, especially in Texas, nobody wants to run into you. They just want your stuff. Right now, Simply Safe Home Security has extended their biggest ever summer sale to September 3rd, which I think is what, next weekend after next? $100 off Simply Safe Summer's package. It's the biggest one they've ever had. Has everything you need to keep your home safe from intruders. It's around-the-clock monitoring that has $15 a month, and it's no contract. So you do it month by month. It's protection done right. Done the simple way, the smart way. It's Simply Safe. Don't miss out on this offer. It ends September 3rd. Go to simplysafebeck.com. You'll save $100 if you do it right now. Simplysafebeck.com. Simplysafebeck.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
There is a what I would consider a really risky bet that things are going to change and the governments of the world are going to allow private businesses to control money. And that bet is Bitcoin. And a friend of mine who runs Xapo.com, XAPO.com, happens to be in town. He grew up in Argentina, and he remembers when the currency collapsed. And the stories that he has told me are just unbelievable. And There is this run on Bitcoin that's going right now, and I don't know if it's real or not. I think it is, but I don't know what's going to happen to Bitcoin. I can't imagine the central banks of the world saying, "Oh, you know what? We're going to get out of that business." I can't imagine it. But he says that Bitcoin is going to be more important or a bigger change to our lives than the internet. And he's a
really?
Yeah. He's a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and deep, deep thinker. And I don't think he's ever been on this show before and wanted to have him in. He happened to be in town and was going to stop by. And I asked him if he would be willing to come in and just explain Bitcoin and what's happening and what he believes the future looks like that's coming up.
And he's going to bring us a handful of Bitcoin each, which is nice. I thought that was a nice way to, no, they welcome.
A, they don't exist, and maybe and I don't think at the price they're just going to start giving them out.
Probably not. No. Well, they're about 4,000 per coin right now. Now, jeez. Remember, when Donald Trump announced for president, he came down the golden escalator, they were about $260
oh
a coin.
Oh, my gosh.
And now they're 4,000. I mean, first of all, Donald Trump coming down the escalator feels like it was 1874, but it was not. It was actually 2015, but just a couple of years ago. And you could have made, you know, 20 times your money almost.
The first time Bitcoin was ever used in a transaction, it was used to buy a pizza.
I think it was Papa John's pizza.
Okay. So we're not talking an extravagant pizza, but I don't remember how many Bitcoins it took to actually buy the pizza, but it was
8,900.
It was a close.
It was 10,000.
10,000?
10,000 Bitcoins. So if you paid for that pizza, if you had those 10,000 Bitcoins today,
it's a good number. You're at, let's say, $40 million. $40 million pizza.
That was a $40 million pizza.
Oh. So it was.
Whoever made
so
that
it
purchase.
Was an extravagant pizza.
It was.
I won't have you back watching Papa John's pizza.
Yeah. You know how there are people in Silicon Valley that, you know, they're putting like gold leaf on their steaks and stuff. That's just like eating $40 million worth of gold.
And it was a Papa John's pizza. Was it good enough to justify $40 million? There have been times in my life where I've spent $40 million on a pizza.
Yeah. I would have.
Like right now.
I would have.
Yes. I'm not hungry right now.
How much money do you have on you? Because I can
not
make 40 that
million. Not 40 million.
It's amazing. I'd love to talk to that guy and see how many Bitcoin he has left.
He's one of the original miners and everything, so he probably, that was not his only stash, I'm sure. He probably is still very wealthy at this time. But.
$40 million on a pizza.
Jeez.
And it wasn't that long ago.
No.
It wasn't that long ago. We'll talk about that and so much more when we come back.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
Get a Casper mattress and start your year off right. Try it in your home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to casper.com/Glenn. $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
So I have a friend that we met maybe 4 or 5 years ago and asked him to come by to explain Bitcoin the first time we met and didn't get it. And still, Bitcoin is such a foreign concept to most people that it's hard to get your arms around and hard to see the world changing this much. But then take a gander. Look at what is happening to the world. This is the kind of change that we're headed for. We have Wences Casarius. He is the CEO of XAPO.com. This is a wallet. He's a startup guy. It's a Bitcoin wallet. And full disclosure, the company that I use to buy and keep Bitcoin could be one of those things that, you know those people who are like, yeah, my grandfather bought something, you know, stock in this thing called the telephone. And now you have an empire. That's kind of the deal. It was 10 years ago that one of the first guys to do a person-to-person, in fact, I think he was the first guy to do a person-to-person transaction, bought a pizza with Bitcoin 7 years ago. The Bitcoin that it took to buy that Papa John's pizza, today worth $40 million. And that was 7 years ago. What is coming in the future? We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Winches Caserius, he is the CEO of Xapo.com, XAPO.com. He's a technology entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of this Bitcoin wallet startup. He says that Bitcoin will end up being bigger than the internet itself and changing our lives more than the internet. That is quite a claim, Winches.
Yes. I also think that Bitcoin is an experiment still, and as such, it has chances of failing, and chances of failing that are non-trivial. So
yes,
it's quite probable that it can also fail. But if it succeeds, it's likely to be more important than the internet itself, especially for many billions of people, I could imagine, in the future, preferring that you take away their internet but not their Bitcoin.
Okay, so I want to get to that here in a second, but I want to just explain what he just said was so true, and it's why I've said to people, look, you have $500, you should put it into Bitcoin, but don't put anything into Bitcoin that you actually think, oh, man, I'd hate to lose that. Then don't put it in. Because it is really risky. You don't make the kind of money that is being made even right now on something that's not risky. This is really risky.
This is incredibly risky, and what you're saying is very good advice, which is nobody should own an amount of Bitcoin they cannot afford to lose, because they may very well lose it. So it's important to understand that any money you cannot afford to lose, you should not have in Bitcoin.
Right. Right?
It should only be play money that if you lose it, you're okay. It's a
right.
small amount.
And that kind of explains, I mean, there's what is it, 90%, Stu, of the people who own Bitcoin, maybe even more, own less than one Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I mean, people are in it literally for $500 or $100 or whatever. Is there a minimum getting in?
There is no minimum.
Okay. So tell me how you believe people will say, don't take my Bitcoin, but you could take my internet. What do you mean by that?
Understanding Bitcoin is simpler than the internet, really, at a technical level, if you will. And I think that when people don't understand it, it's not their fault, but our fault, the people explaining it. We make it more complicated than it needs to be because it makes us sound more intelligent, I guess, or something. But
we try that a lot too. It doesn't work for us.
You think about it, most people feel confident and comfortable about their understanding of the internet, right? Without really understanding how
it works.
How it really works, technically. It's not necessary to understand it. Or even a credit card, right? Most people feel very confident with a credit card, understanding how it works. But if you ask them, what happens when you swipe the card? Where does that information go? Does it go to your bank or to the merchant's bank? At what point does it get approved? Who says it, right? We don't really need to understand all of those details to understand how credit cards work and what they can and cannot do for us, etc. Same thing with the internet and the same thing for Bitcoin. And the things that do matter and that we need to understand of Bitcoin are quite simple, really, and it's three. Three things that make Bitcoin unique that did not exist before Bitcoin existed, that Bitcoin brought to the world. Number one and most important, it's that it's not controlled by anyone and it is not possible to control it. It's a key feature. Without it, it would be irrelevant. It has a lot of very positive consequences. It has some potentially negative consequences, but it's what makes Bitcoin Bitcoin. It's nobody can control it. Not me, not any group of people. Not any company, not any country, not any army. Nobody can control it. That's number one. Number two is there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. It's a finite number, right? And that cannot be changed. And number three, whenever you have some Bitcoin, you are free to send it to anyone you want, anywhere in the world, pretty much in real time and pretty much free or very, very low cost. It's that last quality, it's quite revolutionary, and a lot of people call it the uncensorability of Bitcoin. No one can keep you from acquiring some Bitcoin. It's impossible to do. Nobody can keep you from keeping those Bitcoin, and no one can keep you from sending those Bitcoin to whomever you want. When you put those three qualities together, and that's really all you need to understand about Bitcoin, how that gets accomplished, it's complicated and technical, but not really needed to understand, just like you don't need to understand how the internet manages to deliver all of these movies and stuff that it does, right?
You grew up in Argentina.
Yep.
When the economy collapsed, when the money collapsed.
Correct.
And I'm imagining that that drives you quite a bit when it comes to Bitcoin.
I think so, yes. I would imagine so.
Tell me the story of what it's like when there's a currency collapse.
My parents are sheep ranchers, and in my lifetime, in my childhood, I saw them lose everything three times. The first time that I have a memory of it, it's because of hyperinflation. And I have this, every time that they lose everything, it was because something happened with the country, either hyperinflation or the government confiscated all bank deposits or a huge devaluation, right? All kinds of crazy experiments that are hard to fathom from the perspective of someone who has lived in an economy where you've always been able to trust the dollar and the banks, and so did your parents and grandparents. I have this memory of my mom coming to get my two sisters and I out of school. That never happened before, so something was going on. And in the middle of the school day, and she was carrying two plastic bags full of cash. And she was a receptionist at the government bureau, and she had just been paid. And her salary fit two plastic bags of cash, of bills. And she took us to the supermarket, and she gave us each a list and told us what to carry. We each had an aisle. We got all of those things, and we all met at the cashier. And after everything had gone through the cashier, there was some money left over, and she sent us back to get more stuff. And one of my sisters asked, why don't we save some money for tomorrow? And my mom explained, no, tomorrow it's going to be worth less. Mm. We have to spend it all today. And I will never forget that, partly because it's easy to understand the economic and financial consequences in a family, in a society of that. But it's harder to imagine what's really going on, which is much more beyond the financial consequences. It's that something happens to the social fabric when people cannot trust something as basic as money, and a lot of people go crazy and desperate, and something very quickly, some trust breaks down that takes years or generations to rebuild.
Talking to the CEO of Xapo.com, XAPO.com, it is a Bitcoin wallet startup. So I buy my Bitcoin, and it's now in a wallet. It's in your bank, if you will. If I'm not mistaken, your bank is buried in some mountain in Switzerland or something, right?
Correct.
But it's not a bank like we think of a bank.
No. It is a bank in that you can use us to buy Bitcoin, to store, to keep the Bitcoin safely, to make it very easy to acquire the Bitcoin, mm-hmm. to store them safely, to send Bitcoin. It is not like a bank in a more technical manner, in which today, when you go to a normal bank, they own your money and they owe it to you. Mm-hmm. So if you look at their balance sheet, they have an asset, that is the money you gave them, and a liability, that is what they owe to you. We are a purely custodian, so we do not own your Bitcoins. Your Bitcoins are only yours. And there's many reasons why we think that that's a lot safer. So we are the digital equivalent of a safety deposit box, right? And the safety deposit box is ours, but whatever is inside, it's yours. And if we were to disappear or go bankrupt, what can go away is the safety deposit box, but the contents have to go back to you.
And what makes you think that, well, before we get there, tell me what happened with this fork in the road, because this caused some real panic with people, because they didn't know, they really didn't even understand the concept that Bitcoin, because it's becoming to be used more frequently, I believe Japan now is recognizing it as an official currency. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Japan becoming a Bitcoin society?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and because the transactions are happening so rapidly, there was talk about we have to have a faster way to process these. This is my understanding.
Yeah.
And there became this fork in the road between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin. I don't know the difference. What is the difference?
Not really. Again, it's not really a very big deal. Basically, what happened, and Bitcoin is an open source software, so we all can see every single line is public. And the five of us could do another fork again if we wanted. Right? Mm-hmm. We just copy all the code, paste it, and run it ourselves or run it with another group of people. And it's up to the market to decide if they want to use ours or the other one. Mm. So this was always a possibility. Finally, someone did it for the first time. I think this will be a feature of Bitcoin going forward. We will see forks here and there. And there will always be one version of Bitcoin that is the most used, the one that has the longest history. And then there will be others that will be like cousins that were derived of Bitcoin, but will turn out to be different, right?
Can you turn your Bitcoin into cash?
Of course, into normal cash?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like any currency.
Yeah. And what is the percentage now of things that you can buy? I mean, there was a big push. We spoke 5 years ago. Let's get, you know, people need to start, you know, companies need to start taking Bitcoin as payment. What are the big companies doing to accept it? Are you seeing any big movement?
There's about 100,000 merchants online that accept Bitcoin. It's my opinion that Bitcoin has been around for less than 9 years, and it will take another decade or two for it to get established. I think that the age of Bitcoin becoming a way to pay at a merchant is quite far away. I think that the era we're looking at is about something very different. In fact, I think that things like what we are seeing, you know, we had to go this year through the fork for everybody to stop worrying about and learn that it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Forks are something we can live with. It doesn't really hurt anyone. But until it happened, a lot of people were freaking out about it, right? And I can tell you so many things that people freaked out about every 3 months in Bitcoin, and we have to see them happen for people to say, oh, it's good. Oh, it's well thought out. Oh, it's robust. It works. I think we have a lot more of that to come. Right now, I think Bitcoin is, in this first stage, establishing itself more as a not so much for payment, as a way, more like what you said that you're doing, Glenn, which is you're holding it as a store of value just in case. Not unlike what some families did with, they had somewhere in the house a stash of some jewelry just in case, right? Or some gold. It's more like that. And only if it succeeds at that first, with very massive adoption in the hundreds of millions of people, it will then make sense as a payment mechanism. Yeah. But right now, it's a bit too early. It can be used, and a lot of people do use it, but from my subjective point of view, the more important thing that is happening at this stage is it's expanding as a store of value.
Wences Casarius, he is the CEO of Xapo.com, XAPO.com. You should check it out. And as I said earlier, don't put money into this that you can't easily say, ah, I'm fine without it. This at this point is one of those things that could make you a lot of money, and you could lose every single dime. And so you put just a little bit in there to just, what the heck, let's give it a whirl and see what happens. Thank you, Inches. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bless. Thank you for having me.
Our sponsor this half hour is Goldline, another set of investments that you make if you think things are going to spiral out of control. Goldline, unlike Bitcoin, has been around, or gold has been around forever. And it's the same kind of thing. When people start to worry about what's going to happen with the dollar, what's going to happen with the economy, when you start seeing headlines like this, investors grapple with signs of unrest. Hedge fund managers says the U.S. is most divided since 1937. Fed's big bond unwind may clobber the stocks. That's when investors start to say, where am I going to put any money? I'd like you to read an exclusive report from Ronald Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. They identify five threats to the economy, and it is available for free now by calling 1-866-465-3546. That's 866-GOLDLINE. They're also extending their price protection programs for as little as $2,500 in the door. You'll get 3 months of price protection. So you put $2,500 down, they're going to make sure the next 3 months, if the price goes down, they make it up by giving you more gold all the way up to a year for a $25,000 investment. Make sure you read their important risk information, because everything is a risk today. But find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. It is for my family, and it has been for centuries. 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
We have won
the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
There's a ton of things that I have to do this year. One of them, get organized, get into better shape, spend more time with family and friends. And to do it all, I have to be well rested. And that starts with getting a great night's sleep, which you're guaranteed to get every night when you sleep on a Casper mattress like I do. Casper is, I think, the perfect mattress, not only because it is really, really comfortable, it supports my back and everything else, but it is so wildly inexpensive when you A-B compare. Casper mattress, I'm not alone in loving it. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. The mattress ships for free in a box so small you're going to be saying to yourself, how the heck do they get it in there? Get a Casper now. Start your year off right. Try yours in your home for 100 nights free with shipping and returns. Go to casper.com/Glenn. That's $50 off the purchase of your mattress. You can do it right now. casper.com/Glenn. $50 towards the purchase of your mattress, inexpensive, and a great night's sleep. casper.com/Glenn. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We're going to have
that's fascinating.
The CEO of Zappo stay with us for a second, because we were just talking in the break. There is a real downside, a risk to this, but the world completely changes if it works. And you were just saying that there's about a 20% chance you lose all the money, right?
I would say at least a 20% chance you lose all the money.
Okay. And you said you thought that there was...
On the other hand, there's some upside.
You're saying that there's a 50% chance...
Yes.
That Bitcoin, one single Bitcoin, now worth $4,000, was worth $200 when Trump took that long escalator ride down 2 years ago. You're saying that in 10 years, you believe that could hit $1 million.
I think there is a 50% chance that one Bitcoin could be worth more than $1 million.
That's worth a $4,000 investment, right?
What I would say is that it's very worthwhile. Like I would say, the most irresponsible thing you could do would be to own an amount of Bitcoin you cannot afford to lose. Have the kids' college fund there, or your retirement, or a mortgage. That would be really the most irresponsible thing you can do. But if you put
$500 in... Because you're like, you know what? We're going to scrimp and we're going to save, and I'm not touching our savings. I'm not touching anything. We're just going to stop going to movies, going out to eat for a while. I'll put $500 in. $500 is worth a lot of money if this is right in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my point, is that the second most irresponsible thing you could do is not to have any, right? It's so asymmetrical that you can have something that doesn't really, is not material to you, but it can have a very material impact on your life. So why not do it?
Okay, back in just a second.
Convince me.
What does the world look like? Should he be right? When we come back.
So you got to stop going out to eat now.
Yeah.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Wences Casarius, he is the CEO of Zappo.com, XAPO.com. Full disclosure, I am a client, have been for a while, of Wences' company, bought Bitcoin, and bought it in a way that I think is reasonable. You have to make your own decisions, but I looked at, you know, what we have in savings and said, honey, what are we willing just to if we were going out on a crazy bender, what would you be comfortable losing, you know, on a crazy bender, you know, for our 20th anniversary or whatever? What do you, we just flush it down the toilet. What's that number? she came up with a number, and I looked at it and said, okay, maybe a little lower than that or a little higher than that.
Did she shudder when you said 20th anniversary?
Yeah, she did. And she thought blackouts would be included. Okay. So she was willing to go a little higher. But anyway, and that's what you put in. You don't put money in this at this point. I think it's irresponsible to advise you to put money into this because you could lose every penny of this. And I think you could lose every penny because I just don't see a way to where the central banks say, okay, well, we're going to let a private industry go ahead and take the money supply over. But maybe we can get to that. I want to get to the upside on this because I just read an article, and Stu and I were talking about it last week, that some experts are saying that Bitcoin could go up to, what was it, 200,000?
I think it was 10,000 to 100,000, yeah, was the idea.
And you're saying that you think in 10 years that it could go up to a million plus.
Yes.
In Bitcoin.
Yes. I think that what you are giving is very sound advice. Nobody should own an amount of Bitcoin they cannot afford to lose because they may very well lose it and regret it.
And you could buy $5 worth.
You can buy any amount, $5, yeah, $2, $10, yeah, any amount you want. And I think the most irresponsible mistake would be to own an amount of Bitcoin that you cannot afford to lose. But the second most irresponsible would be to not own any, because I do think that if Bitcoin succeeds, it's likely to be worth more than $1 million in less than 10 years. And I think there's about a 50% chance that
would
happens.
Have sounded crazy even 3 years ago.
I think it still sounds crazy, and I think there's tons of risk to it.
Yeah, but it's not as crazy as it was when it was at 0.008 cents. No.
And every day that Bitcoin doesn't disappear and that we can remove another layer of fear, oh, we have fear of the Chinese, or we have fear of the fork, or we have fear, there's always something. Every day we go past one hurdle, it's more likely to succeed.
Is there an event that would change the game for Bitcoin in a positive way?
I get it a lot from questions like this from journalists and also venture capitalists, mm-hmm, and other types who are who have a part of their job is to chase news or shiny new objects.
Right.
I think the rise of Bitcoin is meant to be boring, like the rise of email, right? If someone was charged with reporting with the rise of email, it would have been the most boring thing ever. Oh, today there's X more people using email, and now they're using it also for work, not just to say happy birthday. Oh, mm-hmm, now there are more messages being sent, but it's just more of the same. So if you do a copy-paste of the last 8 years of Bitcoin one or two times, it gets there without anything shiny or new. Mm. It succeeds. Today, there's about 35 million people who own Bitcoin. There's about 250,000 new people buying Bitcoin every day. It's moving about half a billion dollars a day, $500 million a day, and it's doubling every 6 months. So,
what does the world look like when Bitcoin is, let's just say, it makes it $500,000 a coin?
I think that a world in which Bitcoin succeeds, it's a world in which Bitcoin has become the world's first global, non-political standard of value. And at the same time, the first global, non-political standard of settlement. This sounds very conceptual, but I'll give you very tangible, very concrete examples of what this means. We used to have this for 5,000 years in the form of gold, but about 500 years ago, gold was slowly replaced by reserve currencies, the last one being the dollar. And the reserve currencies have not been so good at being a standard of value. Mm-hmm. For example, if I want to compare how much my grandfather paid for his first cabin in Patagonia when he first got there, with how much your grandfather paid for a cabin somewhere or a house somewhere, mm-hmm, we can very easily compare the square footage of my grandfather's cabin with your grandfather's, but when we want to compare the value, it's complicated because there are different currencies, different times, complicated, and sometimes even it will involve some subjectivity in how we calculate it. And in truth, it shouldn't be. It should be just as easy as comparing square feet. Right? It used to be just as easy. If you want to compare how much cost Genghis Khan to put together his army, which how much it cost Cleopatra to put together her army, even though they're very different time periods, very different geographies, with very different military mm-hmm. technologies, it's very easy to compare because both did it around the gold standard, and you can measure very easily.
People don't understand, a $20 gold piece, you used to be able to walk in and buy a really good suit, I mean, top-of-the-line man suit for, and maybe a shave and a haircut for a $20 gold piece. That's about what that same $20 gold piece would buy you today if you walked in. It's just an ounce. And an ounce of gold is about, you know, $1,500, $2,000. And so a really, really good suit, that's what you're paying. So that shows you the inflation. It should be it was $20.
Yeah.
It still is, according to gold, $20. But the currency keeps changing.
Yeah. Imagine in Paris, there is a meter inside the glass cage, a platinum meter inside a glass cage, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to represent the standard of a meter. And 1,000 of those, it's a kilometer, and it makes length comparisons and very easy. But imagine if, according to some political necessity of the year, we change it a little every year. We make it a little longer, sometimes a lot longer, sometimes maybe a little shorter. Imagine how hard it would be to compare any length or to mm-hmm. just keep track of stuff. And well, that's what we're doing with value, and it doesn't make any sense.
Going through what you went through in Argentina, do you see the same types of things in other countries like this one?
I mean, the signs?
As far as, you know, the hyperinflation. I mean, with this world you're talking about with $1 million bitcoins, is this a world where, you know, national currencies have collapsed and they've gone to Bitcoin? What does that look
no,
like?
No, I think that, in my opinion, and again, this is subjective, in my opinion, a world in which Bitcoin succeeds, it's a world in which all countries still keep their currencies. Countries will never have an incentive to move to Bitcoin. In fact, I think it would probably be bad for national economies to switch to Bitcoin because it's giving up a lot of tools that countries can use for good if they do so responsibly. But a world in which Bitcoin succeeded is a world in which whenever you ask for the price of a currency, you say, what's the price of the euro? You get a price in Bitcoin, 3,200 bits. And what's the price of the New Zealand dollar? 1,200 bits. And what's the price of the Turkish lira? 800 bits. And when your grandkids ask you, why was it different when you were growing up? How did you ask for the price of a currency? And you'll say, well, when you ask for the price of the euro, we set it in dollars. And when you ask for the price of the dollar, we set it in euro or yen. It's like, wow, that's weird. You did it in terms of analysis, like asking for the price of oil and have it in terms of copper. And yeah, well, that's how we did it, right? A world in which Bitcoin succeeds, that goes away. And whenever you ask for the price of a currency, all the currencies exist, but they are priced in terms of Bitcoin, which is the first global, non-political standard of value. When you ask for the price of a commodity, whether it's copper or oil or something else, you get a price in Bitcoin. When someone from Kenya is transacting with someone from China, then you use the Kenyan shilling or the Chinese yuan, right? Or the dollar or sure. the euro. They use something that is apolitical, that is global. Right?
And I think that's why at least this audience is interested in this, because you have the two of the things that you talked about. One is no political control.
Yep.
You know, there's a healthy skepticism of government in this audience, and I think that's a great thing. And the other part is scarcity. Mm-hmm. We see, you know, every time we want to solve a problem, we print another $1 trillion, and that is something that is not possible with Bitcoin. And yep. so it solves the two major things that I think scare people yep. about currency.
Yeah. And in that regard, it could be very much like gold was for 5,000 years, and gold worked really, really well as a standard of value for 5,000 years. But then it has something else. That's a standard of value part. But then it has something else that is even more powerful, that it has embedded in it a standard of settlement, meaning that anybody can settle with anyone, anytime, and pretty much for free, without asking anyone's permission. Today, if you want to settle with someone, you need to be part of a network, and those networks can only belong if you're a bank. Whether it's Visa or MasterCard networks, you have to be a bank to belong, or whether it's the ACH mm-hmm. network in the US, you have to be a bank to belong, or the SEPA network in Europe, you have to be a bank to belong there, or the Fedwire or Swift. And that adds cost, at risk, time restrictions. This is a settlement network that anybody can participate. It's open 24/7. So imagine that Russia is at war with China. During that war, anybody from Russia can settle with anyone from China on a Sunday at 2 a.m. without asking anyone's permission. So that makes the standard of value even more powerful because you know you can settle, right, at any given time with anyone.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Wences Caceres, he is the CEO of Xapo.com, X-A-P-O.com. It's a Bitcoin wallet. That's where you can buy your Bitcoin and store your Bitcoin and do transactions with Bitcoin. You lived through Argentina and hyperinflation, the destruction of money then. People are living in denial here in America. I mean, I talk to really smart people and I say, there's no, the stock market makes no sense. That is the beginning of hyperinflation. That is, all these big people and companies have all these great reserves. They're pouring it into the market. That's what's driving it up. It's not real. And they are in full denial that we are seeing the beginnings of inflation. It's just where the dollars are. The average person doesn't have the dollar. The big banks and corporations, they have access to the dollar and they're making lots of money on it, but it's not real. Do you see the world that way?
I cannot help but seeing it that way because of the way I grew up in Argentina. I do think that we are doing something from the monetary point of view that it's new, it's an experiment. And I understand people who are much more intelligent than I am and more educated who explain to me why this experiment makes sense and why it can work well, right? It's an experiment where we never in the history of civilization have we printed this amount of money, the way the US is printing, the way Europe, the way Japan is printing, pretty much everybody. We never had this kind of printing of debt. We've never before had this negative yielding debt. All of that is an experiment, a financial experiment of a scale never seen before. And very intelligent people who have studied a lot more than I have these subjects tell us that there are reasons why it makes sense and it may end up well. Having grown up in Argentina, I just cannot, it goes against sort of my DNA and it makes me very, very nervous. And that's why I think, that's why I do think that it makes sense to have something that is completely apolitical, a standard of value with whom nobody can mess with politically or even militarily, et cetera, that we can all trust as much as we trusted the dollar or we trusted gold before that.
The CEO of Xapo, XAPO.com, talking about Bitcoin. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Glenn.
You bet. Back in just a second, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter. Don't try to waste another second trying to sort through countless resumes and cover letters. With ZipRecruiter, they have powerful technology that will efficiently match the right people to your job. Now, this isn't a job site. What they do is they take your job description, and they post it on about 100 different sites. Then they don't depend on just the candidates finding you. It goes out and it finds them. 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in 24 hours. And then you don't have to juggle the emails or the calls to your office. You just screen them, rate them, and manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. And right now, you can post your jobs at ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Try it now. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Thank you so much for listening today at 5 o'clock on The Blaze. We are going to be covering the news of the day and also looking into some things that we kind of put into action yesterday for the love of Pete. Stu is trying to work new technology and is just, you look like...
But trust me on Bitcoin. I can't get my stupid camera phone to work, but trust me on Bitcoin. I don't understand it. It was working before. Now it's going all upside down.
Oh, my gosh. You are ridiculous. Wait, you are absolutely ridiculous.
I will. You can follow on Facebook Live.
It sounds great. Sounds great. What do you guys have up for the Pat and Stu show today?
Lots of good stuff.
Yeah, oh, I want to talk about this this monument in Baltimore. The very first monument to Columbus in the world. It's been there for 225 years. Somebody took a sledgehammer to it last night. Well, because he's a genocidal maniac.
Of course.
Sure. You know,
why, I mean, of course. Why wouldn't you do that? Know,
why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you bring down the Columbus statue?
Well, the Columbus Circle, I mean, we were there years ago. We lived in New York, lived by Columbus Circle, walked by it every day and go, yeah, not a chance this thing's going to last.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, it's just not going to last. There was some reason Dershowitz, I heard this morning, calling for some calm and saying, look, let's have a rational discussion. If we want to move these statues, let's move them into museums where they belong in history. Let's not be the people of Iraq after Saddam Hussein, for the love of Pete.
Too late for that.
It's crazy. Yeah, apparently it
too
is.
Too late for that.
Too late for that. We'll see you tonight, 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.